everyone. I'm Lee Stabert, Editor-in-Chief of Keystone Edge. Welcome back to PRISM, a podcast series produced in partnership with the Pennsylvania Council on the Arts. The goal of these conversations is to shine a light on the power of creativity in PA communities. Pennsylvania once boasted one of the most powerful industrial economies in the world. Steel, textiles, glass, cars, matchbooks, all were made right here in the Commonwealth. Large factories that anchored small towns and big cities alike. As we all know, during the 20th century, things changed. Manufacturing moved elsewhere, mills closed, jobs were lost, populations shifted. But many of those buildings are still here. Erected by craftspeople using materials that are made to last, the state's industrial infrastructure is an essential part of its legacy, but also its future. These spaces mean something to people, and they have a potential role to play in the renaissance of our cities and towns. Today, we're talking to a blacksmith from Johnstown and a hospitality executive from Hawley in the Pocono Mountains. They are inspiring examples of how our history can be both recaptured and reimagined.
My name is Patrick Quinn, and I'm the director of the Center for Metal Arts, which is a not-for-profit forging school in Johnstown, Pennsylvania. And our campus is in the historic Cambria Iron and Steel site that is home to the original blacksmith shop at the steel mill.
So the theme of this podcast is talking about Pennsylvania's industrial infrastructure and industrial legacy and how that's being reimagined for a current moment. Can you talk a little bit about the history of your organization and how it ended up launching and how it ended up in this specific building?
So Center for Metal Arts has been a forging school for about, I would say, 8 years at this point, five of which have been here in Johnstown. I turned the school into a 501c3 in the very beginning of 2018, at the same time we were moving to this site in Johnstown. And it ran for 3 years before that as sort of a for-profit business under different ownership in the Lower Hudson Valley in New York State. So during that time, I was teaching all these workshops and growing the school's reputation and visiting artist programs and stuff like that. And I sort of stumbled across pictures of the historic blacksmith shop here in Johnstown. I was able to schedule a tour to see the facility. And it was during that tour with the head of the Historical Society here that he had mentioned his interest in seeing the shop be reopened as an educational forging facility that housed artist workshops and residencies and all that kind of stuff. And I said, well, geez, that's funny because that's exactly what I do in New York State. And he just casually looked over at me and said, would you want to move your school here and reopen the shop? And I said, yeah, sure. And it was a little bit like just sort of matter of fact like that. But then we worked really hard for the better part of a year to actually make the transition happen. We moved here in January of 2018, started running our first workshops in February. So really quickly, and have been happy here growing the school for since 2018 until now. And really excited to be in this location.
So up until that visit, did you have any relationship with Johnstown at all? Had you been there? Did you know anything about it?
None, nothing, never. It was just, you know, I'm a power hammer blacksmith. So when I forge, I like to forge big iron and use these industrial tools and machines to create functional work and sculpture and tools and stuff like that. So this shop here in Johnstown was built in the 1860s and ran as a functional blacksmith shop for the steel mill, which is one of the most influential steel mills in the world, and then closed in 92. Fortunately, it's been protected and not destroyed when Bethlehem Steel shuttered the doors in Johnstown plant. It's home to all of the original industrial size hammers and tools, and they're still in that facility. So when I saw a picture of it, I thought, oh, I just got to see it. That's all. And then I researched and found out where it was. I felt like the Historical Society was the right number to call.
So what has been your impression since being in Johnstown and moving there? I mean, I think it's a city that for people from Pennsylvania is synonymous with big industry, big heyday, early 20th century, and then also probably synonymous with some of the struggles that came later in the century. What has been your experience living there and growing your organization there?
100% positive, honestly, you know, and I've lived here and there throughout my adult life, but grew up and was born and raised in New England and had traveled a lot. So, you know, I'm used to cities like New York and stuff like that and everything that comes with such a bustling metropolis. But, you know, Johnstown, I think, and you'll have to forgive me if my numbers are a little off here, but, you know, when the mills were going and Johnstown was like a V on the grow, you know, they had like 100+ thousand people here. And now Johnstown proper, I think, has somewhere around 17,000. So from the outside looking in, and I think maybe I don't want to speak for the local community here, but it feels like it's a little down on its luck. When industry moved out, a lot of jobs, you know, went away and a lot of people moved away. So the city feels sort of empty. Like when I got here, there's a lot of abandoned buildings and steel mill ruins and, you know, not many people living downtown and that sort of stuff. But, you know, it's because of that, that this blacksmith shop has remained mainly untouched and available as a space that can be restored back into a functional blacksmith shop and not turned into like a brewery or a coffee shop or some other business that just wants that old industrial charm as their decor. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that makes sense. So what do you think Johnstown needs in order to bring back maybe a little bit of the population, a little bit of livelihood? And do you feel like building the Center for Metal Arts is part of that story?
I do. I think it is. And I think largely what can turn around a city is cheap space for artists. And Johnstown has plenty of that. So hopefully Center for Metal Arts, and I think it already has began to build a community here of folks that come yearly and some outside investment in properties because of CMA and artists spending more time here and just giving the city a little bit more life and culture and stuff like that, and bringing like young blood back to Johnstown. And I don't blame everybody for doing this, but in 92, when the mills closed and people thought, well, there's nothing left in Johnstown, everybody left, right? So the local demographic, I feel like, are a lot of older folks, you know, and then everybody between 92 and now who like graduate from high school are basically like, I'm out of here, you know? So there's like a big gap in the age groups here, I feel like. And I think Center for Metal Arts is doing a lot to bring people of that age group here that see Johnstown with a fresh perspective and weren't, you know, born and raised here and taught to think that when the steel mills left, it was the end of the world. CMA brings like 200 or more students to Johnstown every year from all over the world. And then they leave CMA having a great time, having enjoyed working in the workshop here and learning about the industrial heritage of Johnstown and how important that is, and really hopefully being a part of the future of that. And then they go to all four corners of the world singing the praises of Johnstown. So I think also, you know, CMA is helping to create a positive public image for Johnstown, which it desperately needs.
You're listening to Prism on Keystone Edge in partnership with the Pennsylvania Council on the Arts, which believes that building stronger communities takes creativity. Learn more about how the council supports Pennsylvania's diverse creative sector at arts.pa.gov.
My name is Justin Genslinger. I'm the CEO of Settlers Hospitality and also Settlers Holdings, where we perform hospitality operations for hotels, restaurants, and catering, as well as economic development of historic properties in the Northeast Pennsylvania region, specifically we're headquartered in Lake Wallen Pawpack. And the project that we're here to talk about today, where our corporate offices are, we also have coffee shop, gym, banquet center, hotel is a adaptive reuse of the Hawley Silk Mill, which has always been the largest employer in the town of Hawley, Pennsylvania.
So Justin, it's interesting to talk about where you're based and compare it to Johnstown, because you have a lot of the similar old industry and a lot of the similar broader economic and demographic changes, but you also have tourism because of the Pocono Mountain region. So I think that sort of creates a slightly different dynamic. But can you start by just talking a little bit about the history of the business and how it started and why you decided to grow it in the region where you are?
Hawley, Pennsylvania is a 1,400 person borough in rural Pennsylvania in the Pocono Mountains. Hawley itself came to be from the canal industry in the industrial time period, and in the early 1900s, probably had three times the population, or about 5,000 people, and was largely an industrial supplier of textiles and blown glass to the New York City market. That's how the town evolved, and so it has an industrial heritage. Currently, nestled near Lake Wallenpaupack in the Pocono Mountains, being a tourism area, and just being 2 hours west of New York City and 3 hours north of Philadelphia, is now relies primarily on tourism as its industry.
And how did your specific business, you know, find a niche there, and what's the origin story?
So our family business, which started with the Settlers Inn in Hawley, Pennsylvania, which we've owned and operated for 42 years. I'm the third generation. So we started with a hotel, catering, and restaurant business in town in an old 1927 Arts and Crafts Lodge. So we kind of have a vested interest in historic buildings from the start. I've come back and we've expanded into a hospitality group, operating 5 hotels, 6 restaurants, and a series of catering venues, largely in Northeast Pennsylvania, in the Scranton and Pocono Mountain markets, but also in the Lehigh Valley, adjacent to the original Bethlehem Steel Factory in downtown Bethlehem.
So how did you decide to add the Hawley Silk Mill to your portfolio?
The Hawley Silk Mill has, for over 100 years, been the employment center of Hawley. It's the anchor building when you come into town. It's the largest bluestone building in the world, and in 2009 had become vacant and up for auction. There was a movement to buy the building specifically to tear it down for the hand-chiseled bluestone. A small group of us who were motivated to save the building acquired it as a defensive measure and worked with a group of called the Pennsylvania Downtown Center to create a strategic plan for town for an adaptive reuse project. The campus itself is about 100,000 square feet of space, 75,000 of which is in the original mill. So it's quite a large building, and it would have left a large void in town. So it became an economic development effort, not to bring back industry, but to essentially restore the anchor building in town and use it as a hub for all sorts of business and lifestyle components of the town.
And I know that's not the only historic building you guys have worked in. You mentioned your original inn, but I know literally on my PA bucket list for so long is staying at the Ledges, and I haven't done it yet. But that is also a historic building, correct?
This hotel is a stone glass factory originally and is actually incorporated within the campus of the Hawley Silk Mill. So it's the adjoining factory. Lake Wallenpaupack now stands as the largest man-made lake in Pennsylvania. But before that, the Wallenpaupack River fed right by the site where both the Silk Mill and today's Ledges Hotel, or the original O'Connor Glass Factory, is located. And they were two of the first projects in the United States. There's some evidence that the Silk Mill was the third building powered by electricity with hydroelectric power. And so that river was the power source for the two mills. That power source went away with the formation of Lake Wallenpaupack, which now drives the area's economy.
And speaking of the local economy, how have things changed, would you say, in the last 10, 20 years in terms of tourism and in terms of maybe what the people who come to this area are looking for and what they want to do while they're on vacation? And how does that guide your business?
Hawley and the entire Lake Wallenpaupack region has always been a fairly sleepy, lots of people say dirty dancing style vacation area from the Poconos. That being said, over the last 20 years has really had an economic uplift, which had been needed for decades, really hadn't changed much from the 50s to the 90s. But then along with residents from New York and New Jersey looking to build first second homes became sort of half-year residents, then became with technology and the internet and work from home, you know, more permanent residents. And believe it or not, while COVID was not good for anyone, especially the tourism industry, post-COVID and the work from home movement, if you will, there has been tremendous for the local economy in terms of professionals and more affluent residents moving in, which is having a domino effect on the need for restaurants and office space and hotel rooms and additional things to do, such as shopping and things that you not only do when you're on vacation, but also a place where we can live, work, and play.
Now I'm going to bring Patrick and Justin together to talk more about their work and why these buildings still matter.
I think it's really interesting because I think you're coming from two different sides of this industrial reuse story. One is take an old industrial building, reuse it in an industrial way. The other is transform it into something that is more recreational. But I think that at the end of the day, there's something about these buildings that people love. Like, people want to be in them. And can either of you maybe start by speaking to why you think that is and what you think the draw is of these sort of relics?
I think that, you know, people today are looking for a more, what I would call, unique and authentic experience. And exploring the history of our old buildings, especially those that have a more current use in terms of adaptive reuse, piques interest, but it also is an experience that you can't just get in any shopping mall or cookie cutter building. So for those of us who have a passion for not only history, but also seeing how history can be re-leveraged in a more contemporary way for, you know, today's artists or hospitality groups or shops.
To speak about my building, I guess, or my campus of four or five buildings, it has a lot to do with the craft that we teach and that my community is so passionate about. So when you walk into a blacksmith shop that was built in the 1860s that ran continuously until 92, and you're a passionate blacksmith, it's just a really special experience. You can almost, you know, feel the history, and you kind of walk through there and imagine the workers throughout the decades who've worked there and forged there. And, you know, from my perspective, that facility and this steel mill helped usher the world into the Industrial Revolution. So it has a pretty strong impact on society. I mean, if I say this occasionally with some level of like humor involved in it, but, you know, the blacksmith is responsible for everything we take for granted in modern society now. Like, without the blacksmith, we wouldn't be talking on a digital device. You've got to try to like follow that line back in time, but really it's the blacksmith has sort of invented the tools that put themselves out of business, so to speak. And one thing led to another, and now here we are. But it's just a facility that you can feel the impact of its influence on the world and on society and on humanity and everything like that. So if you're interested in that craft, it's just a really special place to walk into that's almost been sort of frozen in time.
I think what the underlying thing that is really amazing in this conversation is just that spaces matter, the actual space and the history of a space and the feeling of a space. You know, as a writer, am I more creatively stimulated when I'm like looking out at a beautiful view, comfortable, et cetera? Or if I was in like a white box, you know, what does it do to our brains as humans? And what does it do to us to be in a space that has hundreds of years of history, whether you're on vacation or you're working?
I can only speak to myself, but I found myself involved in a profession and a craft that's very material focused, right? So when I walk into a space, I immediately scan the room and assess the materials that are in there. And I'm thinking, like, I want bricks and I want metal and I want concrete and I want wood, you know, all these real materials that have like stood the test of time. You know, when I walk into a space that has wall-to-wall carpet and drop ceilings and wallpaper, I'm immediately uninterested, right? And so when your whole life is revolved around creating things using heat and pressure that are going to last hundreds of years, I'm attracted to buildings that embody those same characteristics.
I can speak maybe as a user of Patrick's craft, and that I think that anything that is authentic and not mass produced seems to be not in vogue because it's a fad. It's just, it inspires a different type of thinking in people who appreciate, you know, finer things and want a unique experience. So we try and provide that more in the way of functional art in our historic buildings. And that's what provides our guests, you know, maybe something that's a little bit different than walking into a cookie cutter branded hotel. And I think that those materials instantly connect with people.
I was thinking about walking into your building there, and mainly when I walk into old and industrial buildings of any kind, I'll notice a lot of the authenticity of it and appreciate that. Like, you know, the window latches may be forged, or, you know, door hardware, or the handrail, or the old tooling or fixtures for big fireplaces. I can't speak to your building specifically, but, like, you know, I like going to the museum via Beacon in New York, and that's an old Nabisco factory, and it's just like walking into those spaces. If you're somebody like me who's interested in materials, construction, quality, it's just great experience.
So both of you, when you were introducing where you live, Holly and Johnstown, you talked about population loss as, you know, one of the big challenges of the last century. So I think that there is, of course, an element to this of trying to bring people back. And I think that there are more than two sides, but two main sides, which is giving people jobs and opportunities and then giving people a nice place to live and a place where they feel excited and stimulated. And in this modern era, a place where they could probably get a latte and a craft beer. What do you think the role is that these spaces have to play in terms of attracting creatives, making the community feel vibrant and healthy?
I can speak to the study that we did at the beginning of our project with the Holly Silk Mill. And the findings were that the town was lacking a series of things, one of which was post-high school education for job retention and keeping our bright people from moving. Another was just industry and business and professional services that would create an opportunity for educated workforce. And quite honestly, I think that a lot of industrial towns shares, you know, what is there to do that you would want to not only visit, but also live here? And so it spoke to a lifestyle component. And so our mission on this project was to accomplish some of those things as a hub for the town. And then the spokes that would fall from that hub would be, you know, individual properties that might do some of the same. So we brought in a community college that now has 300 students and 26 different degree programs. And our office space has 30 different tenants that largely are professional services for people who are largely new residents. And our retail floor has a brewery, an art gallery, some shops, a fitness and yoga studio, a coffee shop, and a catering facility that all helps our hotel business. But it also makes for a community hub or a lifestyle hub where people can just kind of hang out. And all of those things provide jobs for people who live here, but they also provide something to do that's unique. It's not fancy, but it's a little bit sophisticated. And you can't just get it anywhere. And I think that you need the proper facility to do that. And there's no better use, in my opinion, of sort of a contemporary adaptive reuse of a historic building to accomplish that in the same way that Patrick is making homes for artists and visitors to come see that and watch his craft. So I think there's some parallels there.
Yeah, I do think there's a lot of parallels. When I heard what you were describing, I was thinking like, you know, geez, I wish Johnstown had stuff like that, because what Johnstown has going for it, in my opinion right now, is outdoor recreation and well, CMA for sure. But, you know, attracting people to this city is easy for me because they get to come here. I can house them, take a workshop, have a hands-on experience at this historical location. But it's hard to attract a lot of other folks here, I feel like. And I've noticed that as well from like a job creation standpoint. I mean, CMA is growing and we have a lot of positions that we would like to fill. And the hardest part about filling those positions, if they're not filled by local residents, is getting somebody who wants to relocate to Johnstown. You know, attracting people to this region, it has a lot of great stuff to do.
I guess in an ideal world, you know, you attract a few of those people and they attract a few more and they attract a few more, and then you eventually can like support one of these businesses, then multiple of these businesses, you know, in a dream economic development scenario, you know, you have to like light the spark and that spreads.
But it's frustrating when you have a bunch of people here from all over the world and you're like, oh, let's go out and get a bite to eat and a beer, and it's Sunday and there's no restaurant open. Just because, yeah. I just feel like that everybody's so used to not having the business to have their restaurant be open on Sunday. So there has to be like this shift in mentality a little bit, that like, well, things are picking up here. Outside people are coming that do want to take a yoga class or have a latte or, you know, have a beer on Sunday in a social setting and stuff like that. So, I mean, I'm hoping it's heading in that direction, but, you know, time will tell for sure.
Yeah. And you certainly have affordability on your side, I'm assuming, you know, with certain cities getting a lot more expensive. You know, I think there's something appealing about going to a place that is more affordable and you can have space, like, especially as you were saying, if you're an artist, especially if you're someone who works in at a large scale.
Yeah, we definitely do. And that's one of the most attractive things about Johnstown, and I really hope it attracts the kind of investment really going to make the city exciting.
We were just talking a little bit about what, you know, the hoped for evolution in Johnstown, but anything else you'd like to say about Holly or Johnstown, maybe 5-10 years down the road, and about the role that the existing industrial infrastructure can play in that hopefully growth?
I think Johnstown, honestly, is at the very beginning of an upswing. There's a lot of good people here trying to do really good things. So I think there is a bright future for Johnstown, and I'm really hopeful that it's going to become a place where people want to live and spend time, because it has ongoing for it. I took a chance moving here, and it takes people taking a chance on a town like this to turn it around and make it a place that's desirable again. Just like the shop that I'm using helped this city grow and be this industrial epicenter of the world, I'm hoping that shop now, as we've reopened it and restored all the tools and equipment, I'm hoping it's experiencing its second life to help Johnstown grow again as a different place, a place of hopefully, you know, creativity and craft and attracting people who want to come here and make, you know, work of all different kinds. So
I think, like Patrick, I think Qualley has a great future. What it will depend on is developers and innovators who see that future to continue to invest and keep working on the momentum we have right now. We have to seize the moment where technology has enabled work from home and, you know, people who might choose a smaller community with natural resources and quality of life and still be able to participate in the global economic opportunities and then take those funds and use them to fulfill the local economy here. So I'm excited for the time we're in right now, but I also think that it's going to take a fair amount of work to make sure that this is the community in our area that prospers. I don't think that we can just, you know, sit on our hands and hope that people come here. So it does take, I think, folks who are willing to take that chance. I thought that was well put, Patrick. And if we get a handful of those instead of a couple, then we might be able to tip the scales a little bit and see if the dominoes fall in our favor.
That's it for our latest episode of Prism. If you have thoughts on the conversation you just heard or ideas for what we should cover in upcoming episodes, please visit our website, KeystoneEdge.com, and reach out. You can also find us on social media @KeystoneEdge on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Until next time.